Hi everyone, this is Syrian Girl. I'm here with Nick Griffin, who was the leader of the British National Party, to talk about what's been happening in the UK right now with the anti-immigration protests. Nick Griffin, you actually have been a champion of this cause for a long time. What are your thoughts on what's been currently happening?
Well, it's been a long time building up. The media in Britain, and I guess all over the world, are saying, oh, it's all created by the fake information that the murder of three little girls in Southport was by a Muslim when it wasn't. That rumour, fake news, did help to spark the initial trouble in Southport, but it's nothing to do with what's happened since. This is quite simply the British people at the end of their tether, and something has finally snapped. The deepest reason for this is that the mass immigration policies forced on the British people by successive governments, the political elite were given a very, very clear message by the Brexit vote. That was overwhelmingly get control of our borders, stop the transformation of our country. That was the instruction the British people, the biggest popular mandate in British electoral history, gave to the British political elite, change what you're doing. And they threw that back at us and they spat in our face as well. So the people were really to blame. There's other factors which we'll come on to, but in the end, the people to blame for this trouble are the political elite for treating the British people, especially the white working class, with utter contempt.
Basically, you voted for Brexit, I think it was in 2016, and yet nothing has developed on that front.
Nothing's changed. Well, in fact, it got worse because although the British people clearly, and everyone accepts, voted for Brexit overwhelmingly over the immigration issue, the politicians' response basically was to say, well, okay, now we're leaving Europe, so we're not going to bring over Poles and Romanians anymore, but you're going to get more Africans, more Pakistanis, and more Indians. So it was really a mockery and a very cynical and brutal mockery of the British people.
Why do you think that they're doing this? I mean, how is it in their interest to do this?
Oh, that's a huge thing. It's a combination of capitalism needs cheap labor. Politicians, especially labor people, want cheap votes. The far left wanted mass immigration because it's the best way to destabilize the country and build a revolution. The cultural Marxists want to use it as a battering ram against Christian civilization, and the anti-Christian, anti-white Talmudists quite openly want to use mass immigration to breed us out of existence. You put all those things together, and you've got an elite which is hell-bent. It's not just Britain, obviously. Across the whole of the white world, there's an elite which is hell-bent on getting rid of the people who actually pay their salaries.
So, does the right-wing parties voting for like Johnson change anything, Boris Johnson?
Voting for Johnson changed nothing whatsoever. And, as you say, Brexit's a long time ago now, and people have been very patient. And the patience has snapped. It's been helped with the fact that for several years now, go back to the time of the BNP and similar parties around the European world. We were the only people talking about immigration, and all the entire elite wanted to do was to crush us and silence our voices. And more recently, they've changed that, and you've now got a massively funded and exclusively Zionist-run operation to use and try and capture white resistance to mass immigration and other things, the whole trans agenda. Everything's been d being done to us by the liberal elite and the cultural Marxists. This is a really massively funded Zionist effort to capture the resistance to this. They've been doing this for years, but over the last couple of years, they've stepped it up. And Tommy Robinson, obviously, you and all your viewers will be aware of, he's the sort of main front man for this now in Britain, but he's by no means the only one. There's a new TV news channel, GB News. It lost £43 million last year. It's being hugely funded by the usual suspects, and it's all designed to get the white working class in particular absolutely fighting mad against Muslims, not against immigrants generally. The irony of the Southport trouble is that the killer, I have to say, alleged killer, who's a Rwandan of Christian origin and so on, he's exactly the sort of African who Tommy Robinson and co are saying, we've got no problem with them coming into to Britain. Our problem is purely with Muslims. They are the only ones who cause trouble. But this push by this enormous Zionist operation has had an effect. The British people were already very angry, very concerned, and understood they'd been treated with contempt. But this is the final point which has tipped them over the edge. It's created, it is an irrational response, but at the same time, we have to, although that killer wasn't a Muslim, in 2017, the concert in the Manchester Arena, that was a Takfiri Muslim, and you have to say that especially the British Pakistani Muslim community has behaved, or members of it have behaved very badly, and the police and the courts and the British elite have done nothing effective or did nothing effective for years to get a grip on it, with the result that the whole Muslim community gets the blame for the actions of a minority.
So, as a Syrian, I can attest to the fact that many of the people that came to Syria and joined ISIS were, in fact, Pakistani Britons. I mean, not exclusively, of course, but there was a large portion of that. Shamima Begum being an example. And they were doing murders and rapes on the street. So, I do think that we have to admit that there is an issue there with that specific community. But I don't think like I don't think what's happening is necessarily helping because they're being specifically focused on, whereas in the reality is, it's not just them, right? It's like
No,
a
sure.
it's a problem with essentially, look, there's criminals from all walks of life, but at the same time, like why are is the cultural fabric of the UK being destroyed, and surely the elites know that this is going to cause friction, but they keep doing it because it financially benefits them, and it benefits them with their long-term plans as well. But on
Yeah, of
that
course.
point.
On the question of the long-term plans, I'd like to also, if I can, come back to the British Pakistani issue. The long-term plans, not just long-term, short-term, the entire political elite have made it very clear over the last few years that they want to bring in much tighter restrictions and all sorts of protests, facial recognition and all these things. And it's a better excuse for the liberal left to do this when it's theoretically directed against white working class people, rather than being directed against pro-Palestinian demonstrators. But
Speaking of which, Tommy Robinson just came out and made a video statement that the problem is Hamas.
oh dear.
Why are people angry? I'll tell you why they're angry. Because Hamas were allowed to overtake London, overtake our capital city every weekend, flying ISIS flags, Hamas flags, calling for jihad. The
And
point
it's
to
like,
the
what?
coming back to the
What do we
British.
have to, what does Syria and Palestine
Yeah,
like have to
indeed.
do
Yes.
with
Yeah. It's
Britain?
just incredible. But
So
so
anyway.
because I've taken in since October the 7th, I've taken a very, very pro-Palestinian anti-Zionist line, particularly on Twitter when I was on Twitter until a couple of months ago. More on that perhaps shortly. Because of that, I was contacted by a very significant number of Muslims in Britain saying, "I never have thought I'd agree with you, but you're the only man talking sense, etc., etc." So I've got some good connections with those people now, and they all, of course, have been saying for months, "Oh, look at Tommy Robinson! It's outrageous what he's doing. It's obviously a Zionist operation." I'd say, "Yes, absolutely," and they're now saying, "Oh, well, the stupid Brits! Your people fell for this hook, line, and sinker." And I've had to say to them, "Well, yeah, it's entirely true. I agree with you, but your people aren't blameless, because when the BBC and this same political elite were going off with all the propaganda nonsense and poison against Assad and against Syria, the Muslim community in Britain in general, the Pakistani community in particular, they all fell for that. As you say, they sent volunteer fighters and rapists to help destroy Syria. They raised funds for them. They were absolutely convinced that everything they were told by the BBC and the British political establishment about the wicked Assad and the wonderful jihadis was true. So you've actually got two communities in Britain who are now heavily influenced by different sections of the Muslim agenda, and they're now poised to clash. And the troubles which we've seen over the last couple of days are absolutely nothing compared to what we're going to get in Britain with, if we're just one spark, the white working class and Muslims in general, but the Pakistanis in particular, start fighting. And it's that close away.
And I can tell you, like, it's It's probably the two very dangerous sides, okay? And they're very, very fueled right now because of
They are.
what's happening in Palestine. It's like a powder keg that's going to go off. And it just so happens that that powder keg was directed at Zionists, but, someone Zionists like put British people now in the battering ram, and now they're fighting each other on the eve of a regional war. And it just so happens that whatever Zionist narrative is either out there, whether it's being bought by the Pakistani community in Britain or it's being bought by, and not all of them, I'm not saying all of them, okay, just like some of them, but many of them. But also, the Zionist narratives are being bought by the British. It's always the Levant that gets the short end of the stick. But you've actually been to Syria, and that I think during the war, and which is something that very few British people agreed to do, and I very much admire you for that. So you have a fan base in Syria, and of course, we kind of understand what's the plan. The problem, I think, that is by making it not just about immigration in general. And I've seen Tommy Robinson say, "Well, we want Indian immigration. Indian immigration is like the, you know, the is a good like example of immigration working."
Because Hindus and Sikhs have been a great shining example of how immigration can work and can benefit, yeah? How it does work.
And he also, said that like African immigration is also fine. I'll post links up here with his statements. But the fact that it's more focused on like the Middle East in on the eve of potentially a huge regional war, it indicates to me that the objective is to create refugees and then to use those refugees to promote immigration. Because essentially, like, not mo most of the people who are getting into to Britain aren't actually the refugees that they create. But the fact that there is the perception of the refugees need us, I think that that is opening the door to all sorts of other types of immigration.
That's part of the reason. The other reason for it is they want the British people, the working class, mad enough so they want to go and fight a war, specifically against Iran. That's what it's really, this is really about the Likud program to go to war and to get America and Britain and their allies to go to war against Iran. It's also to get the middle classes over here mad enough to be prepared to pay extra taxes for a war against Iran. And I think this really started when they had the war against Iraq in Britain. There was such a huge groundswell of popular opinion against it that it became clear to them that to have another war. When everyone knows that was all on the basis of lies against weapons of mass destruction and so on. To have another war, they've really got to massage public opinion beforehand, and this is largely about that. And as you say, of course, it will create more refugees. That provides the excuse for the Labour government to say, "Well, we've got to let these poor people in. Look how terrible it is." They're not doing that because they care for those people. If they cared for Muslims, they wouldn't go around bombing and destroying their countries in the first place
The
and allowing
genocide in
Israelis to do so
Palestine.
and so on. Exactly so. They don't care, but saying they care provides an excuse for a fresh wave of refugees for the continued destruction of Britain and the British people, which is part of their long-term agenda.
Can you please tell us about your Twitter account now? You've only recently, you touched on it before, but I looked at it and it's basically still there. And I'll post it here, but it's kind of locked down. So what
Yes.
exactly happened there?
Well,
They brought Tommy
I
Robinson back just in time.
they brought Tommy Robinson back and got rid of me. I'm not the only one. So, what I was taking, as I said before, a very, very strongly anti-Zionist line, and was doing extremely well. I was reaching a lot of people, enormous hits, then when the massacre at Khan Yunis at the hospital was exposed a few months ago, I was banging away at that for several days. I realized how important this was. And I found something which I don't think anyone else did. I've not seen it referred to anywhere else, that there was another massacre by the IDF in Khan Yunis in 1956. So these people have got form for this. So I hammered this for a whole day to try and get it, knowing a lot of journalists were watching me and lots of British Muslims and so on as well. So I hammered away at this, and all of a sudden my stats went from sky high to according to my accounts, stats, I'd had zero impressions, zero views in the previous month. despite the fact that actually they paid me hundreds of pounds for the previous couple of weeks because I'd had a good lot of traffic. So, and at that point, shortly after that, so it was nailed to the floor, shortly after that, my account was hacked and someone took it over and basically wiped it. So it's still there. So I've been through the long process with Twitter X, trying to appeal to get it back. And although I was paying them for the blue tick, and although they were paying me for my traffic, not a huge amount, but a useful amount. So there was a two-way exchange of money, but they still say, well, we don't know it's your account, so you're not getting it back. So although Tommy Robinson and co. were re-Twitterized, not Nick Griffin.
Just
so
in the
anyone wanting to watch me, follow what I'm saying, by the way, now, please join me on Telegram, t.me/Nick Griffin.
I will post it up for everyone to check it out, please. And also, I would think that we should also push to run a campaign to bring you back onto Twitter. I didn't know that. I will tweet this video out with a @support to Twitter as well, and we can run a campaign. They were able to bring back Nick Fuentes, which I think you should have a talk to. But they have been censoring us quite a bit. I know that Eva Bartlett as well had her YouTube account shut down. So, you know, that's I'm actually amazed that any of us are surviving at all in this climate.
But I think I was beginning to sometimes feel slightly embarrassed that I was still allowed on Twitter. What am I doing wrong that they haven't axed me?
So what do you think is the solution for like the British nationalists? Because for me, like for people like me who were to say, point out like, hey, you know what, Tommy Robinson, not just him, but others, JBP News, they kind of co-opted your cause. They're Zionists. They're like trying to like pull you in a direction to using you as a battering ram against the people that they're against specifically. And rather than direct you to first like government officials or something, it's going to be an in-person, like, you know, the little guys are going to be fighting each other essentially. Yeah. So like, what can we say to convince them? Because for me, they will answer, well, you have an agenda, essentially, to make that statement.
Well, nothing can be done to sort Britain out. There isn't a solution to this now for various reasons. The demographics are a shambles, so many things. We're in the position of someone who's jumped out of a plane without a parachute. And on the way down, people can propose all sorts of things they could do. But it's not going to make any difference to the final result. Britain is going to end in something like a civil war, which neither side will win. And after 30 years, they'll reach some sort of peace agreement like they did in Northern Ireland, and the two or more communities will have to learn to get along. It's going to be a most unpleasant mess. That's simple facts. Lots of people on the right now are saying, oh, mass deportations. We insist on mass deportations. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. The British Army, the British Police Force, don't have the capacity to deport the Muslims of Bradford, let alone the rest of the country. There's
rather,
no possibility.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I think that the state is going to be coming down hard on the nationalists.
Yes, the state's going to be coming down very hard on the nationalists. The good news for nationalists is that this, although the Zionists have effectively taken control of sort of the public mentality of many, many people, to do that, they've had to raise the issue. And they've raised the issue saying, oh, you should just be worried about Muslims. But they've legitimized radical public dissent against immigration as a whole. There's a whole, whereas previous generations, my generation, the one after that, came along basically following in the mentality of the 1968ers, especially the more intellectual ones. It was basically leftist. Now, there's almost no leftists among the really young people. There's different levels of right-wing extremism. And so there's an enormous groundswell being built up, which a seriously organized and realistic revolutionary vanguard party can take great advantage of. So there's an enormous amount of work to be done. But the first thing is people have to stop talking about waving magic wands and one day we're going to stand in elections and we'll win and we'll change it all. The thing which British nationalists need to do is to concentrate on the fact, first of all, that we are second-class citizens in our own country. You're not even allowed at present to register a charity for the English, for English purposes. So we, the indigenous people of this country, are actually not recognized as indigenous, not accepted as such, and we're second or third class citizens. And the trouble going on, you know, now, the difference in response, Keir Starmer and co, when the Black Lives Matter rioting was going on, they took the knee. And now when it's white people with legitimate grievances, and some of them doing things they shouldn't, you know, looting shops, mindlessly attacking the cops when they haven't provoked them, which generally they do, but even unprovoking police are getting attacked. So people are doing things they shouldn't, but the Starmer response is, you know, crush, basically exterminate, we're going to throw you all in prison, we're going to come down the full force of the law. And it's that dual standards, the two-tier policing, when it's Muslims and leftists causing trouble and other immigrants, basically it's kid gloves. When it's the white working class, it's bang, the iron fist. And so nationalists, real nationalists, need to start getting organized really as a civil rights movement, and to find ways to help protect and educate and guide the people who are on the streets without effective leadership. Because the Tommy Robinson model is to wind people up, point them in that direction, and then Tommy or Danny Tomo, they just walk away. They're not involved, and it's ordinary people in ordinary communities that are going to get hurt. So there's immense scope there for real serious nationalists to start getting into these communities and saying, you know, if you're arrested on a demonstration, get in touch with us. We provide legal advice, these sort of things, and then start mobilizing and organizing our communities, not just for self-defense, but for self-reliance and just getting on with our lives as separate as possible from the state and everything that they do, because everything they do is poison.
So I suppose I have seen they will, you know, obviously the media is going to be specifically targeting the nationalists in this. I can see that. Yeah. I have seen pro-Palestine protests. I'm not sure if it's in the UK, but other places, I'm getting slammed by the state also, especially here in Australia. So I think, you know, it's obvious who's in power here. But the question I have, I suppose, is first of all, when did this really start? I mean, has Britain always been co-opted in this fashion, or like how did it evolve into this? This is maybe a too long of a discussion. So if it's too long, we'll try to make it a little bit shorter.
I've got to go shortly as well.
Yeah, I know. So, sorry.
So when you say Britain co-opted, are you talking about the Zionist agenda or the immigration thing in general?
I mean, the Balfour Declaration was signed in 1914.
1916.
Oh, 1916. Sorry, 1916. My apologies.
Yes. Yeah, it's a long, long thing. Actually, there's a long history. A section of the English Protestant upper class or ruling class was Zionist before the Jews were Zionist. It goes back to some Protestant heresies, which go back a long, long way and predate the, you know, now people see Christian Zionism as an American thing. The Scofield Bible, particularly of the turn of the last century, being the thing that really caused that. But there was this element of intense pro-Zionism in the British elite a long, long time ago. So it does go back a long way. Britain, of course, then had a big clash with the Zionists at the time of the Mandate in Palestine. When I grew up sort of involved as a youngster in politics, there were many older men involved who were involved in British nationalist politics to a significant extent because of what they'd seen in Palestine and the way in which Zionist terrorists treated and murdered British peacekeepers. That, of course, is now worn off. And the British political elite has been intensely Zionist for many, many decades, not least because any politician who didn't want to be that way, they're all terrified of the mass media. And Zionist domination of the mass media in Britain and the Western world is so strong that to go against it is to court political suicide.
Yes.
So therefore, the course of least resistance is to say nothing. Or that's the best they can do is to say nothing or go along wholeheartedly with the Zionist agenda. And, you know, that's where we are now. Obviously, wars and rumors of wars make lots of money for the military industrial complex. And it helps the United States. One last thing I'd like to say on this, that people tend to get so utterly fixated on the Zionist thing, and it is a really big issue, as we know, that they miss the point that the United States of America, its deep state, yes, it's closely connected with the Zionists, but still a separate thing. And the dollar is facing world collapse, which will destroy American power forever. And the way in which the American elite are trying to keep the dollar and America up is by driving everyone else down. So we see that with the way that they've used the Ukraine war that they created, for instance, to force sanctions on against Russia, which are really sanctions against Germany and the European Union and Britain as well, because these sanctions and the cutting off of Russian oil and gas hits us far more than it does the United States. They're doing that. And the pressure for mass immigration all over Europe, Merkel's children in Germany and all the rest of it, comes very much in the end from CIA-operated fronts and the George Soros-funded fronts, which are very close for all that he's very left and so on. They've all been very close. And they promoted the multiculturalization of Europe and Britain. They promoted deliberately the refugee crisis, which is overwhelmingly young single men of military age, precisely so that they can destabilize Britain and Europe, because to destabilize Britain and Europe means that relative to them, the United States of America and the dollar are doing better. And to an extent, I think they use, just as they use Soros. So everyone says, oh, look at Soros, look at this either ultra-leftist or look at that Jew. And they don't notice that behind almost the scarecrow figure of Soros, there's the mass power of the American deep state. And it's the same with this business that we've got a jar full of white ants and black ants or brown ants, and it's them shaking the jar. And it's a very serious, very dangerous thing. And the ants in Britain are on the point of going to war.
Well, thank you so much. I will let you go because you have somewhere to go, but I really appreciate it. I'm going to play a clip where you told us that, you know, during your party, when you were like on the rise, they asked you to stay clear of any issue other than the Islam issue.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Well, again, I hope we can do this again, and I hope we can get your Twitter account back.
Yes.
Pleasure.
Great talking to you again.
Let's find a solution. Okay, bye.
And as you know, over the last couple of years, there's been an immense amount of effort thrown at this party and the key individuals in this party, at various local as well as national levels, to take us out of the field. Out of all the groups, the most important one by a mile was the English Defence League, British Freedom Party. That was a serious, systematic, hugely funded effort by a section of the ruling elite, by this Zionist neocon clique, to dominate, to simply take over nationalism and turn it into their tool to encourage the white working class to go and fight their wars, and so that when the banking collapse comes, people are looking in the wrong direction instead of the real culprits. This party, we were approached. I was approached. We were offered money from the United States, and all they wanted was two things. They only wanted us to concentrate on Islam, and I yield to no one in my criticism of Islam and grooming. I put my neck on the line. Many of you have put your neck on the line as well. But it's not the only problem. And they wanted us only to focus on that, and it only came with one other thing. They wanted us to drop our criticism of the banking system. Those were the only two things. We had to concentrate on talking about Muslims, and we had to drop our criticism of the international banking system. And I refused, and we refused. That was in about 2007. And all hell broke loose, really, from that time, when systematically they tried to take this party apart. And there's the self-same people in groups, various of the so-called Tory think tank groups and so on, things like Policy Exchange, things like the Centre for Policy Studies, the self-same people who organised and ran Nothing British to devastate the BNP's electoral chances with lies in the Sun and things like that. Those self-same people were there right at the start conspiring to create the English Defence League, then the British Freedom Party, to take real nationalism in this country and break it on the wheel and then replace it by their puppet.